I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So welcome back to The Criminal Connection with your host, Terry Stone, a.k.a. The Podfather. Today, we've got a very special guest, great friend of mine, starred in many movies together. Welcome to The Criminal Connection podcast, Mr. Josh Myers.
Hello, you all right?
How are you, mate?
Not bad, how are you, Geezer?
Good to see you, mate.
You too, mate. Oh, as always, very good.
No, I appreciate you coming on. And,
pleasure, anytime.
I'm looking forward to talking about your illustrious career.
Yeah.
How we met.
Yeah.
On Grindr.
Yeah, yeah. Don't tell everyone that. That might be true, 50-50.
But Josh, you know, you've been acting now for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've established yourself as a true crime geezer actor. I know you don't just do that.
Yeah.
But obviously that's been the body of work. And I think, obviously, for all the listeners and all the viewers watching and listening to this podcast, I think they'd like to know who the real Josh Myers is.
Who the real Josh Myers? That's a hard one. I don't know. Are you ready for this?
So we're going to go way, way back.
Yeah,
so when you was a little boy, where did you grow up, Josh?
Where I grew up? I grew up in Edgware. Yeah, went to school around there, went to primary school. Then I went to secondary school around there. But ever since I grew up, I've always loved acting. I've, you know, it's in my family, as you know, which we're stumbling
upon. I'm really disappointed. I thought you was going to literally sit here and say, when I was a little boy, as far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
No,
but you wanted to be an actor, but that's amazing.
Yeah.
How old was you? Like,
I must have been 10.
Wow.
Yeah, definitely about 10, 11 years old. I just wanted to be an actor. Always, I loved it. I loved being, I'll tell you what happened was, basically, my dad and my grandpa, they're in the film industry. Obviously, my grandpa's not around anymore. But you know my dad. He's a big film distributor. My grandpa owned loads of cinemas across the UK. Also a distributor. So ever since a young age, like having time off school or going to like, you know, like when you've like gone on the summer holidays, you've got like 6 weeks off, haven't you? I used to love going to work with my dad because I'd go to the offices. I could see all that there'd be like a film library, posters everywhere, films, just be like, I'm like in it. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes I got to go to film sets with my dad and I was just like, and I could see how everyone gets treated and it was just amazing. I was like, oh my God, I want to be an actor. So my dad was just like, well, why don't you go to drama school? And that was that. Then I went to Sylvia Young.
Put your beret on.
But yeah, went to Sylvia Young Drama School. I think I started there when I was about 13, 12, 13. And then, as they say, the rest is history.
Yeah.
I just carried on going. I never gave up.
We got to talk about your dad's name as well.
It's my grandpa's name, isn't it? Right. My dad's dad. So, yeah, so
my... This is a great bit of movie trivia for you all.
Yeah, this is incredible. Not a lot of people believe it, but when they start Googling and researching, they're like, oh my God, but cause it is quite surreal, I'm about to say. But basically, my dad's dad, my grandpa, was called Michael Myers, and he helped John Carpenter. He distributed Halloween all over the UK because he owned cinemas. But prior to that, he did a film called, John Carpenter did a film called Assault on Precinct 13.
Brilliant film.
Yeah, it's a great film. And it bombed in America. It did shit. It did really crap.
One of my favourite movies.
I know, I loved it. But then my grandpa took it to the UK, distributed it all around London, made a big name for John Carpenter, made him quite a success across the pond, you know, like back in America. So people started taking him seriously. Yeah. So his next project was Halloween. So then to pay homage to my grandpa for everything he's done, he called my grandpa the man with the golden handshake. He basically said, everything you touch turns to gold. So to say thank you to my grandpa for everything he's done to help him like boost his career, he named the killer in Halloween films after my grandpa. So that's why the killer's called Michael Myers.
Did your granddad used to wear that white mask when he went
to
meet
No, I used to wear the white mask. No, I'll tell you a story about it. Yeah, so that's why the killer in all the Halloween films called Michael Myers is after my grandpa. Yeah, because I've got a big letter at home from John Carpenter on my dad's wall in the office. It says... the man with the golden handshake, if it wasn't for Michael Myers, I'd be working in some motel somewhere, sweeping up. He made my life, made my career. So that's why he called it after him. Crazy, isn't it?
It's what a great story.
I mean, it's crazy because if you think, like, it's quite an iconic serial killer film, like, in all over the world. Yeah. And my grandpa was named after it.
I remember the music.
Oh, it's great, wasn't it? Bum, 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 bum. Oh, every time it came on, I used to get goosebumps. Like, yeah, go on.
I'm pretty sure that I either saw that on a video and scared the shit out of me.
Then, Halloween films?
Yeah, the first one. Yeah. And then it was like every Halloween there would be another one come out. Yeah. So it'd be like, right, we've got to go to the cinema. And watch
it. I think the original was really good. They've all been all right. I think the last one, I think, was Halloween Kills. I think it's done now. Well, you can never know. He always fucking comes back. Then he's been shot, stabbed about a million times. He just walks down like the fucking Terminator, doesn't he?
It sounds a bit like Rise of the Foot Soldier.
Yeah. Just keeps getting resurrected. But
in Rise of the Foot Soldier, if you die, you don't really die. You can come back anytime.
Yeah, you can come back anytime, hopefully.
But with... so you're at 13, and obviously you're doing the Sylvia Young thing. So was that mainly theatre?
No, it was everything really, because obviously when you go to drama school, you've got to sing, dance and act, don't you? You've got to do all three, really.
I'd love to see you singing and dancing.
Well, I can't fucking sing. And
I can see you pirouetting, Josh, going, la, la, la.
Oh, I'll tell you what, mate, I can't fucking sing and I can't fucking dance. Can't fucking act either. But no, so basically, my grandpa knew Sylvia. So basically, you know, said a couple of things, whatever. And she was like, you know, I can't just let him in because he's your grandson, whatever.
He said, why not?
He punched her.
I would have done. But I said, why not? He's my son. You know why?
He whacked her. He got arrested.
Don't make me put that mask on. Don't make me put a mask on and come in your house.
To fucking iron you out.
With a sword,
Do all of you until we're young. So, yeah, so that was it. So, basically, cut long story short, I had to woo her with an audition.
Were you flattering your eyelashes, sir? Were you like that?
Yeah, I was going like that. She said, I've got to woo her. I've got to, like, woo her with an audition. Because I said, I can't sing and I can't dance. I just want to act. She was like, well, you need all three at this school. So I did an audition from Trainspotting. Right. I must have been about, just not even 13. And I just literally blew her away. I remember just her sitting there just going like this. And I was like, oh, have I done something wrong? She was like, that was unbelievable.
You didn't play the dead baby in Trainspotting, did you?
No, I couldn't do that. But I tried.
I thought, just imagine walking in with a nappy on.
Yeah, I was trying to be proper fucking method and just walking over a shitty nappy. No, so I can't remember what the scene was, but it basically goes...
What character was it?
Oh, I can't remember. Was it? I can't remember his bloody name now. It was the bit where he goes, "Have you ever?" He talks about heroin and stuff. And he's like out of his nut, and he says, "Basically, ever tried heroin?"
That was like, Ewan McGregor, right?
I think it was Ewan McGregor. I can't remember. I was like 13 years old when I died, but I was reading it from the book and it had the script on. I just found a bit that would be cool. It's basically talking about take the best orgasm you've ever had, times that by like 100, and you're still nowhere near the hit of a heroin.
Really?
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing I went for. And
I watched that movie, and you know, I thought it was a great movie.
Yeah, it's a good film. Yeah.
I mean, Danny Boyle's a great director.
Oh, he's fantastic director.
But I did when I watched that movie, it did make. I mean, it is a great advert not to take drugs.
I want to be like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
not good.
So that was amazing. So that got you in the door.
Mm.
You wooed her.
Yeah.
And then what happened after that?
I pushed
her
down the stairs.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, she deserved it.
It's now called the Josh Myers School.
I've run the fucking school. I've run that fucking gaff now. It's mine. So that was that. And then I just started going to classes. Mostly, like, I'll do improvisation, I'll do script work, how to act in an audition, how to act in front of a camera. Just all little things like that, which really help, you know, like has helped me like career-wise so far, because certain things that I've learnt through the years, through other actors, through yourself, through Craig, through Nick, through Andy, through all these people, you know, everyone's got a little bit of advice they can give you, because they've all got experienced different things. So, yeah, I've just learnt so much growing up being an actor, and obviously being in drama school as well. It does help.
So how long was you at Sylvia Young for?
About 3-4 years. Okay. I was there.
So then you'd done that, and then when did you actually get an agent? Was that at the end, or was
so
that?
So after that, my friend was Sylvia Young a long time before me. She's after me, she's a bit younger. But she was with an agent called, and I was getting blast from the past, a lady called Sharon Harris. Mm. And she was my first agent. I think I must have been 17, just 17. Right. And we used to go, and she did drama classes as well. She'd do like a drama class, plus she had an agency. So I went there for 2-3 years, did that. Was getting little bits of auditions here and there. Right. But obviously, then I started getting a lot of film work. But I got a lot of my own stuff. It's all put networking, who I know. But one thing that was good for me is I never just got a role. I'd get a role, but I'd have to audition for it, right, which I think is better for me anyway, because I don't want people to go, oh, yeah, he just got the role because of his dad, because of his grandpa, because he knows Terry, because he knows Andy. I've got to audition for the role, do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's just been going really well so far.
So obviously, you know, growing up in North London, you know, was you ever exposed to sort of... what they would say called
wrong-uns. We're a fucking wrong-uns, Tell.
No, I know that, but I mean, just growing up, I mean, obviously your dad's obviously distributed movies.
Yeah.
And obviously you've got a joy for acting.
Yeah.
But obviously London is a great place. For wrong-uns.
Yes, it is. No, you're 100% right. No, it was actually funny, like growing up, obviously I love my acting, so that was always my focus and my path to try.
Did you do any sports though when you were?
I used to play football all the time. Loved my boxing. I got actually went to tar boxing. I did tar boxing for about 10 years. I still do it now. Yeah. Not like professionally, but like once or twice a week I go to the gym, hit the pads, do a bit of sparring.
Do you have any fights?
Nah.
Just keep fit.
I mean, I would say I've had fights in the ring there, but it's like not judged, it's just like heavy sparring, but it's basically like me and my mate kicking the shit out of each other. It basically was a fight, because especially if you're training with your mate, they don't give a fuck, do they? They just smash you, they want to break your nose for some reason. Yeah. I don't know, but yeah, that happened many times to me, as you can see my bent fucking nose.
No, I think it's
character, isn't it, my nose?
I think absolutely. And yeah, and I had, when I used to box, my nose was actually bent, so it was actually round to the side like that.
Your septum was bent.
And I'm not vain at all. But then what I did was I found, like, as I was getting older, it was harder to breathe.
Yeah.
And the guy, my doctor said, oh, we said, look, he goes, we can just do that and it's done.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And he said, but we've got to put you out. So right. I went to the hospital, and it was actually really funny because I don't know if you've ever been put under anaesthetic.
Yeah, I have many times.
But it actually fucking sends you off your head.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
So I remember literally, they give me this anaesthetic and they wheeled me through into the operating room.
Yeah.
I remember looking up and I saw these lights, and there's this woman looking down at me, and she goes, hello. I was going, it's you.
we used to work together in McDonald's, right? And then I just like went out.
No way.
And I woke up and I was like, fucking hell. And you sort of don't remember anything.
Really?
But then I could see my nose. It was like,
yeah, fucking, yeah. They're all stuffing up here. They got to put it all out.
The worst thing is when they pull it out.
Pull it out, yeah. I've had that. Did you have a bent septum? The bone at the bottom?
I think so, because they straightened it and then it's still a bit squidgy.
I had that done the first time I got it broken, but then they just said the other time there's no point if you keep training and boxing and sparring.
If you keep getting punched in the nose.
Yeah, if you keep getting punched in the nose, don't have a nose operation. Yeah, no, that was it. So wrong-uns, yes, I grew up with a lot of wrong-uns. Right. I was probably one of them as well. Right. But who isn't a fucking wrong-un when you grow up? Right. Actually, not a lot of people, that's rubbish. Some people are actually nice.
Everyone's wrong-uns. Growing up, I mean, what was it like growing up in North London, sort of? Because you're 37 now, right?
37, yeah.
Yeah, so growing up, you know, sort of 25 years ago.
I'll be honest, Tel, I don't really remember much of my 20s.
Right.
I'll be honest. That was purely down to the fact that I was partying all the time, drinking, doing a lot of drugs, hanging around with wrong people, wrong-uns. You know, I don't do drugs anymore. That was in my past, but I did do a lot of it. Right. So I don't really remember my 20s growing up. And it was like, it kind of affected at the time. I always think now, like, where would I be if I never did that?
Right.
Because my career might have taken off bigger then.
So you definitely think that that hampered your success?
100%, yeah. Right. I think, you know, if you're drinking and doing drugs every weekend or during the week, or, you know, you're in that party vibe, you know, then you're not dedicated to your craft. Do you know what I mean? To really, really pursue what you want to do.
And I mean, you know, for anybody who's never taken drugs, I mean,
yeah.
What would you just do it like recreationally, or would you like go on a bender for like 3 days?
I would do recreationally, and sometimes I'd go on a bender. Like I'd go like 2-3 days, no sleep, just drinking, doing drugs, partying with girls, doing this, doing that. And then it's the aftermath. You feel great at the time, but then the aftermath is just absolutely disgusting.
Right.
And you know, I suffer with depression as it is anyway, my mental health. So.
Would you say that the depression come out of that, or do you think you'd always been like that?
No, I've always had depression way before drug taking days, even when I was a kid. I'm primary school, I didn't want to go to school, I didn't want to get up, but I didn't know what it was. Yeah. From a young age.
I mean, lots of people talk about mental health and depression and these different things. And obviously, you've had it from a young age. I mean, did you ever get to the root of what caused it?
Well, that's the million pound question. I still don't know what causes my depression.
Do you know something? Sometimes, you know, when you go through it, and sometimes you might be prescribed drugs, sometimes you might have counselling, or sometimes you might have somebody help you through it. And sometimes, you know, they can actually pinpoint what's caused it and then try and fix it. But for your whole life?
Yeah, I've suffered a long time. You know, it goes up and down. At the moment, I'm in a very good place.
You only get really depressed when you talk to me.
Yeah, basically. Okay. Is this done yet? Can I go home? Fucking hell. It just goes up and down like that. But I mean, I'd say since probably January this year, I've been, until now, hopefully it carries on, I've been in the best place physically and mentally for a very, very long time.
That's good.
I feel fantastic. I feel really good. I'm working out every day again, focused on my life again. It just goes in waves, Tel. Just 1 minute I'm happy, 1 minute I'm sad, 1 minute I want to cry. Mm. That's depression. That's what it is. But, you know, I never give up. I wake up every day, I'm grateful that I'm alive and everything's going good. My daughter's doing amazing. My life's going good.
What would your advice be to anyone who's listening or watching this
that
feels down or low or does suffer from depression? What tips would you give them to enable them to sort of cope with it and maybe get themselves out of that sort of dark place?
I mean, look, it is easier said than done, you know, like getting someone out of a dark place, because I've been there many times and someone just says, oh, come on, you can do this, you can do that. But it's, you know, people who are watching this, if they're suffering with depression, they'll know that it's you can't just tell, they've got to do it themselves. You can't rely on other people to boost you up. You've got to do it yourself. Yeah, people boosting you up helps and it makes you feel good. Seeing your friends. I'd say a massive one is talking. You've got to talk to someone. You feel depressed, you feel unhappy, you feel upset. Pick up the phone, call your loved ones. Call your best mate.
Is that why you ring me like three times a day?
Yeah. Is that why you send me naked pictures all the time?
But absolutely. But
it makes me happy, so it's fine. It works
so
out.
We got that relationship where we can do that.
Sometimes I'm in a business meeting and I'm like, I want it.
Not again.
Oh, for fuck's sake. He's wearing his mankini. It's all hanging out. It's terrible.
I didn't think we should talk about the mankini, but...
Oh, sorry, cut that bit out. I liked it. It was nice.
Yeah.
Early Christmas present.
But you think that's the key, the talking, the actual...
100%. If you suffer with any mental health issue, mainly depression, I'd say definitely talking saves lives.
Do you think talking to your loved ones or talking to people that aren't necessarily that close to you, so you can actually just offload on somebody?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I've got a therapist that I see once every other week now. I mean, it used to be once a week, now it's every other week, and it's going to get once a month, you know. But, you know, there's still demons I've got in my head that I've got to deal with, but I talk to her because she's an outsider, and she's very good. She's very good what she does. And I talk to her, and I tell her my problems and how I feel that day. Right. I write stuff down in the morning. I set myself goals. I just want to be happy every day. And I think that if you want to live and happy and be happy, another massive thing for me is I got rid of all negative shit out of my life. Yeah. I don't have any negative people around me anymore. And that includes old friends, new friends, exes, anything like that. If you're negative towards me in an environment that I'm in, nah, see you later. So that was another massive thing for me, that I had to get rid of certain people in my life.
It's actually quite funny because I've done the same thing all my life.
Yeah.
And occasionally people say, oh, you know, why don't you talk to them anymore? When you hear about these people going to these school reunions,
yeah.
You know, there's one person I speak to from school. Right? And people go, oh, that's a bit weird. You know, didn't you really have any friends at school? I said, I had loads. But I think the problem with being alive is you go through life and you meet people, and depending on where you are on your journey and where they're on their journey, sometimes you're aligned and you can go together. And then other times, sometimes they go and you're still on that path.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you go
and they're
still on that path. And the thing is, you know...
It's growing up, it's life.
It's growing up. And also, I think, you know, I think a true friend is someone that you don't speak to every day.
Yeah.
You don't see every day. You could not see him for a month, and then you see him, and it's like...
You pick up where you left
your
off.
Your best mates, you know
what
I mean?
Yeah, 100%. I've got a lot of people like that.
And they're your true friends, because people that need to be in your life every day, every minute, every hour, why haven't you texted me, why haven't you done this, why haven't you done that? Why haven't you liked my picture on Instagram, why haven't you done this, why haven't you done that?
Yeah.
You're just like, fuck off, you're too needy, right? And, you know, I always think it's funny when people, you know, get upset.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if they put you in these groups, and they're like, everyone's messaging on these groups, and then you don't comment, and people go, well, are you not contributing? It's like, mate, I'm fucking busy.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm on about 50 of these groups, and I will contribute if I've got something to say. But if I don't say anything, it's not because I'm being rude.
Yeah.
It's just because I've got nothing to add.
Yeah, it's a waste of time, isn't it?
And you know, my wife, on her school groups, you know, they're all on, because we got kids, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
There's all these groups going on about this, picking someone up.
Yeah.
Freddie fell over. Julia, a leg, and, you know, where can we get this? And I said to her, please do not ever put me on those groups.
Yeah, fuck that. Fucking hell. Imagine your phone non-stop.
And it's just like, why does anybody send these messages? You know what
I mean?
It isn't important, you know what I mean?
Yeah, my dog's friend's cat fell over and needs a blad, needs a plaster on his leg.
Yeah.
Don't care. Fuck off, mate. Do you know what I mean? But these women love it, though, don't they?
Oh, no.
I bet Maxine loves fucking on the phone talking to her pals.
To be honest, I just...
Because these women, they love... Like, when I go to my mum's house or something, sorry to cut you, but, like, I'll come and say hello to her. She's like, oh, one minute. My dad... Then I walk around the corner, my dad's sitting there watching TV. I'm like, all right, he goes, oh, fucking hell, mum's been on the phone an hour already. I'm like, oh, shit, I thought she was just on it. She said she'd be 1 minute about an hour ago, Josh. They're talking about the same fucking thing. So what
do you know, I don't know
how they do it. No, are you like that on the phone? I can't speak to... Even my best friend in the whole world. I'm like, oh, cut minutes. Yeah, sweet. All right, mate, yeah, no worries. All right, bye.
If I'm excited about something or we're having a laugh about something, I could talk to someone for an hour on the phone.
Yeah.
But I think the difference between men and women is men are like, matter of fact, blah, blah, boom, boom, off. Where women are they actually want to have a chat.
Want to
or a bunny.
Yeah,
want to have a bunny for an hour.
Proper, yeah.
And my mate made me laugh yesterday. I had some lunch with a friend of mine yesterday. And he said, I'm on holiday, right?
Mm.
And he said, because he does this like iPad job, he said, I wake up in the morning, I've got fucking hundreds of emails to do. So he says, I go in the gym,
Yeah.
Then we'll work out. And then we'll work out if I'm running or whatever. I'm just doing the emails, getting them off my desk, come out of the gym, jump in the shower, have breakfast, right? And then he goes, I read the paper. And then I've got to do a couple of calls. And my goal is by midday, I'm done. And then I can actually have 5 or 6 hours on holiday to chill out.
Yeah.
And then at 6 o'clock, I've got another 100 emails to do,
a few more calls.
But he said, I just want to have that thing.
Yeah.
And he said, so I come back from my calls at midday. And he goes, and I'm fucking stressed out and I'm agitated, right?
Yeah, of course.
And I'm like that with a suntan lotion. He goes, I lay down on the bed and I put my ear pods in. I think, ah, I can relax now. And then the missus goes, can you put some suntan lotion on my back? And he's like, for fuck's sake, just come back. You've seen me doing it. Why don't you ask him?
Yeah.
It's not called comfortable.
That's quality.
And then the other one is when he's on a call and he comes over to the table and he's like, going, and then she started having a conversation with him.
Yeah,
She goes, I'm going to order another coffee. And he's like, what? I'm on a call.
They do that. My ex used to do that to me when I was on the phone. I'll be on the phone to like someone important, like a film or whatever. I'd be like, yeah, I know, mate. Yeah, I really am. And then she'll just come sit next to me and like cuddle me. And I'm like, this is a private conversation. Can you fuck off? Like, imagine I sat next to her like, you know, I'm single now, but you know, imagine you sat next to like a wife or girl, they're like on the phone, like important, and you just come sit right next to them, like earwig into everything they're saying. Fucking, you're like, what are you doing, you weird cunt?
But it is
strange fuckers, these people.
But it is funny. I mean, have you got a girlfriend at the moment?
No, I'm single.
Oh, okay.
Single, so ready to mingle.
Young, single, free, and ready to mingle.
Yeah. No, I don't want anyone. I got my daughter, I got my family. I'm happy and single. I just, you know, the first time, like I said, in a long time, I'm actually happy. So I just don't want anyone to ruin that at the moment. You know what I mean? I'm content in life. I feel great. But yeah, no.
So going back to, you know, you've got this agent, you left drama school, you're doing a bit of acting. When would you say your first actual break, when you actually thought, wow, you know, I'm actually doing this now? What was it a film or was it?
I remember my first ever film role. That was a film called Psychosis, and I'm in it. I was like 18, 19. I got killed in the first like 10 minutes. But it was a role for me. It was just like my first actual role on a film set. I've been on film sets before, but not actually acting in front of a camera. This is my first, like, right, I've got a role now. And I had to get this, it wasn't like a serial killer thing. It was like this guy was just a lunatic and he went around killing campers and stuff. And I remember I had to get my neck bitten. So it's all prosthetics.
You were killing people?
I got killed.
Oh, okay.
So I was in it for like 10, 15 minutes, and then we all get killed, and then the film opens. And it was, it was very scary for me. So I was like, you know, I reckon 18, 19, like I said, and the director, you know, I remember Reg Travis, he wrote and directed that. And
Amy Winehouse is
ex-fella. He was a good pal of mine, Reg. And he just said, like, I want you to watch American Werewolf in London. I said, why am I watching that? He said, well, you'll see when the werewolf attacks the geezer on the moors, how he screams, how he reacts. And that is how I want you to react when this guy jumps on you and bites your neck. Oh. So I'm like, all right, cool. So I'm watching it. What I was scared I was going to be like. Because obviously I was 17, 18, 19, whatever. I had a bit of a, not like deep voice, I ain't got deep voice, but I was a bit, sound boyish. And then I just done it. I don't know how I fucking done it. I was shit myself. Imagine that, like, they're like, you're standing like that, and they're like, he's going to jump on you, he's going to bite your neck. When that's action, you've landed on the floor, we're going to pump the machine, all the blood's going to come spraying out, and we've got two or three takes on this, Josh. It needs to be spot on, because otherwise you've got to do the prosthetics again, and this and that. No pressure. So then there's like the director, producer, all those, you know, it's like on a set, like 40, 50 people on the camera like that, watching me, and they're like, and it was freezing cold snow, I was shaking like that, like, can you stop shaking, Josh? I'm like, yeah, no worries. Then the blood's all running down my neck, I'm freezing. And on action, they're just like, right, action, he's just bit you go, and I just did it.
See, lots of people that watch and listen to this don't realise how much fun it is working on the film
when
it's snowing and you're covered in blood and you're semi-naked. I mean, that's
Hollywood,
really baby.
Yeah, it's really fun. Loved it. Yeah, my cock went. I didn't even have a cock. I didn't even do that. It just went. I had nothing.
Like, where is it? Where is it?
Looking down my leg.
But that
was my first film role, Psychosis. Amazing. And then I shit myself. But I'd done it.
And was you sort of partying then or not? Or was that?
No, not really. I think I started partying pretty much in my 20s.
Right.
Like 20, 21. I think it was 20, yeah, from 20 onwards, I started.
So psychosis, after psychosis, what was after that?
What was after psychosis? I think I had another little role in another Reg Travis film called Screwed.
Well, I remember that.
Yeah, he was in that, yeah. So I played a prison officer. I played a Greek guy called Panos. That was fun. Because I can play Greek, apparently. Because I look Greek or Romanian or Kosovo, I don't know. That's what they say I look like. Yeah, I played a Greek guy. And it was really good. It was based on prison life, really. And what it's like to be in prison and the attacks on prison. You know, one of my cellmates in the film tangs himself and gets my reaction. So, yeah, that was pretty cool. Prison
what was
film.
Your reaction? You go, oh, my God.
No, when I saw him hanging. Well, first of all, I shit myself because I didn't realise they were doing that. They didn't actually.
That's quality, though, isn't it?
Yeah. They didn't tell me they were hanging someone. They just said, "Oh, when you come in, you're going to find him dead, but we don't want you in the cell yet. We're just setting up."
I suppose as an actor, that you can react.
Yeah,
to that.
Yeah. So when I walked in, I was like, "Fucking hell!" And he was like, "And the guy hanging there wasn't really hanging. Obviously, it was all set up in harnesses." Yeah. So he's like, "All right, mate." I was like, "All right, fucking, this is a bit surreal." I was like, "What's happened to you?" He's like, "Well, obviously, I'm hanging, ain't I?" I thought, "Oh yeah, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?" And then he was just like, "You're going to wake up and you're going to hear a bit of fluttering and." Yeah, you've got to see him, he's hung himself, so they want your reaction. So I did that, screamed like a girl, shit myself, and then, yeah, that was it.
Show me what did you go and do? Show us what did you
do. Yeah, that's what I did. That's exactly how the director wanted it as well.
Did he go, one take, Josh,
he just
said,
fuck me, that was the best take I've ever seen.
Josh.
Yeah, he said that was the best take I've ever seen. Especially how you did that scream with your hands as well. He loved it.
Oh my God.
I went, ha! Yeah, it was crazy.
And then after that, obviously, you're probably in your 20s now.
Yeah.
Did somebody actually say to you, try this? Or did you actually, just because everyone was doing it, you just thought, fuck it?
Or what, you talking about drugs? Well, I started with heroin. Am I joking? I didn't really.
Because
you're a massive joke.
Because you watched Trainspotting.
Yeah, because I watched Trainspotting, I got a proper method.
Right.
No, I think I first started with, I think a lot of people when they grow up, they start with weed.
Right.
Start smoking a bit of weed. Then I started selling it.
Right.
Because I just saw, you know, you can make money out of it. And just being a little shit cunt, really. Just think, oh, I'm a fucking top boy gangster when you're not.
Right.
And then.
Did you have like a street name?
No, I didn't actually.
Okay, I'm
trying to think of what would I be called if I had a street name?
Mushane
Moisha. Moisha Blue Balls. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I started doing that. And then I got quite heavy into that. I was making quite a lot of money at a young age. Like, in my 20s, I was making thousands a week selling big bits of puff. Yeah. And then I got pulled over one day on a random pullover. And they pulled my car over, found my drugs, found my scales. I got arrested. That was just for my 21st birthday. I was about 20-something. I'll never forget it. Yeah, I was driving on the way to Harrods or Selfridges to go and buy my then-girlfriend at the time a birthday present. And stupid cunt me had to go drop off, like, half a box of puff to my mate, and I didn't. But I said, I'll do it on my way back. And on the way over there, they're just jumping out, going, right, come in, pull over. I was thinking, fuck. I was thinking, well, just relax. I'm not going to, like, don't smell. It was all vacuum-sealed in the boot and whatever. And then that was it. And then what happened was, at the time, I just bought my car, but it was still registered to the dealership and not to me. So that's why it flagged up. Right. So I think, oh, fuck. But I didn't know at the time why, so I just pulled over. Didn't.
So it was bad luck? It wasn't something grassy?
Yeah, no, no, it wasn't grassy. No, it was just bad luck. And then got pulled over. There was loads of police all around there. And he's like, have you got anything on you you shouldn't have? I was like, no. And I'm going to Selfridges or Harrods, whatever, going to tell them what I've told you. And they're like, oh, we've got reason of suspicion that you might have some drugs in here. But I was like, why would I have drugs in me? I was personal training at the time. I think I'm a personal training top on, but I used to wear that to, like, so they'd look at me and go, oh, he's a personal trainer, he wouldn't be doing drugs.
Right,
so
I can't start doing, like,
yeah, start doing press ups in front of the police.
Start jumps.
Yeah.
Clapping press ups.
Yeah, so that didn't work. And they just opened my boot, found a box, stunk, and that was it. Arrested me, spent like 24 hours in a police cell. Had to go court.
What did they charge you for? Was it just...
I got done with attempted supply. Got caught with drugs, attempted supply, because it was quite a big bit. Yeah, just what did I get? I got community service and like a £100 fine, not a lot of fine. But it was like, I did like 150 hours of community service, because at that time, that was my first offence. So they were just, you know, whatever. And then that was it. I stopped selling puff. And then obviously my family got upset. They didn't know what I was doing.
What shame and tribulation on their family.
I know, it's terrible. I was the black sheep of the family, as they say. Still am. But I'm a good sheep now. But yeah, and then it progressively. I think I still to this day don't know the age of it, but you know, even someone said to me the other day, when was the first time you ever sniffed cocaine? Got to be, I reckon 21, 22, something like that. I tried it, and I've got addictive personality, so that probably didn't go down well because I liked it and it was good. And then I just carried on. I wasn't doing it every day, but it'd be like, because I'd be working or doing whatever, but on the weekends, it's like I couldn't wait to do it and go out. So I mean, when I say I don't remember my 20s, I do, but I don't, you know what I mean? It's a bit of a blur.
Do you think that also, because you, you know, had that sort of criminal offence, but then obviously you then started partying, you was taking drugs, and going out. Do you think that also put a weight on you from that sort of depression?
Yeah, 100%. 100% it did. I think, you know, anyone who suffers with any mental health or depression or anything like that, doing drugs is probably the worst thing you can do because you're on such a high. And then when you crash and it's like, it's all coming out of your system, it's like, I can't tell you, I want to jump off a bridge. So it's like the worst combination. Even my therapist says, like, why would you be doing drugs when you know, like, you feel great and you know before you do that line, before you sniff, before you do anything, that you know the consequences after, but you still do it. But you know, thank God I don't do drugs anymore. I think I'm nearly 2 years.
Oh, without... you got a like part of jump on. I thought you'd have had to just say no.
Yeah, just say no. Yeah, I know. No, so
but I think it's good. I think it's good that you've gone through that experience and come out the other side and then realised like what detrimental effect drugs had on your career.
Massively.
And also on your depression.
Yeah, huge.
And then, you know, you went from doing that. Did you get in any more trouble, Josh?
Yes, I did.
Naughty boy.
All my secrets are coming out now. I mean, you know, I'm not proud of it. I'm not a gangster. I'm not anyone.
But it's good. Do you know what I'm saying? It's good to talk about. And it's good
of course.
That when people watch this and they see you in the movies, they know you're the real deal. They know you've been through it. And they know your experiences, and they know that you've learned from your experiences.
Of course, you've got to learn. You listen.
And that's the key.
Life is an experience, right? And you learn from your mistakes, and that's a saying, and it is true. You know what I mean? Even with women, or going back and forward, or should I sell drugs? Shouldn't? But I know I shouldn't because I know the consequences now. Back then, I was just seeing the readies and the money coming in. I just thought, wow, I'm not even 20, and I'm making 2-3 grand a week doing just making phone calls and doing this and. But, you know, everyone always used to say to me, it will come to an end one day and you'll get caught. Everyone gets caught in the end, don't they?
But that's, I mean, the interesting enough, Josh, I mean, we've had all sorts of people on this podcast. And we've had, you know, gangsters that have, we've had mob bosses, we've had drug dealers, we've had all sorts of people.
Yeah.
And what's always been interesting is after they've been through that cycle and they've come out of jail and they've lost everything, they all say, what a fucking waste. Nobody goes... Oh yeah, great. Let's go again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They all say, I wish I'd never done that. I wish.
Of course.
You know,
but so, it should have, would have, could have. You know what I mean? You don't, at the time, if you're a massive cocaine dealer, you're making millions a month. And then you think, I'll do this for a couple of months. And then you get more money. You think, I'll just carry a little bit more. And you get greedy, don't you? You get greedy. And that was my problem. I got greedy. I could see how much money I could make selling puff. I could see how much money I could make selling cocaine. But then I got addicted to it. I was sniffing more than I was selling.
You got high on your own supply, Josh.
I got high on my own supply. It was
what did Tony Montana say? Don't get high on your own supply.
Yeah, exactly. Don't, trust me, because you lose money as well. that was, again, going through my, I'd say, not a shit stage in my life, because life is good. I had a good upbringing, everything was good, but it was just my addictive personality, my depression, how my mind works. It was just like, I love doing it. I'd go to my mate's house, go out with sniff, party, drink, girls, this, that, the other. You know, I'm 37 now, but it's
but what
out of my league that.
So what other trouble did you get into in your 20s?
Fucking hell, are you a grass or what, mate?
No, I'm just interested. I'm not
getting
a grass.
Going here.
I'm just interested.
I've got loads to tell you.
Loads.
So what else I got in trouble? I've been in trouble with the police quite a lot, to be fair. Fighting. Used to get arrested for fighting all the time. I've been arrested quite a few times. Again, stupid. But I had a very good lawyer, criminal lawyer that I won't name yet. But it's kept me out of a lot of trouble.
Right.
You know. But it's just stupid stuff. It's nothing like I didn't murder anyone. I didn't shoot anyone.
It's just, still time. You're only 37.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, give it another year or so. I might shoot someone. You just do stupid things, do you know what I mean? But like I said, you do learn from your mistakes, because if I didn't get caught, I'd still be doing it, and who knows what I'd get into.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? How much more drugs I'm selling? What drug dealers I get in trouble with? Who wants to shoot me? There's so many things I think about that. If I never got caught, would I still be doing that? Would I be doing my acting? It all leads you down a different path, doesn't it? So in a way, I'm glad I got caught, because I probably, you know, I was making stupid money back in the day.
And when obviously hanging around with these wrong'uns, having a few tear-ups,
yeah,
doing a few illegal activities, do you think that actually... You know, when you're playing these roles in these movies, or you've got to draw on these characters, do you think it's been useful to have that background?
100%, because, you know, there's certain things in films, as you know, like you might see certain people would say certain dialogue, and you would say, well, you wouldn't really say it like that, or there'd be certain amounts of cocaine on the table, or how they're sniffing it, how they're making it, how they're doing whatever, how they're chopping it up for the scene, and you just think, looks a bit unrealistic, that don't look right, let's make it a bit more realistic. And they're like, oh, how do you know? And I'm like, well, no, I did this, I did that, I used to do that, it don't look real, that looks fake, right. You know, just little things like that. And the director might go, oh, all right, well, let's make it look realistic, let's make it so the people watch it go, fuck me, yeah, that looks proper, right. You know what I mean, been there, done that, sniffed it up, done everything.
So you've gone through this crazy like thing in your 20s, and then I know you've had these breaks, but when would you say you actually, your first role, when you actually thought, yes, I'm fucking...
Getting there.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'd say Foot Soldier, the Pat Tate story.
See, I thought it was Green Street.
You're probably right, actually.
And the only reason, because that was when... when you're in the business, right, whether you're acting, whether you're producing, you're aware of people popping up in different things.
Yeah.
And I think Green Street, was it Green Street 3?
Yeah, Never Back Down, yeah.
Yeah, so Green Street 3 was when, and then you did an army thing with Noel Clark.
Yes, I'm Soldier. That was right, yeah. I did Green Street with James Nunn, who's a really good director. And then after that, you're right, I did I'm Soldier.
Yeah. Good job on me, really, because you'd have fucking forgotten about
it. Yeah. Thank God he's here.
But then I started thinking, Josh Myers, you know, who is Josh Myers?
Yeah.
And then obviously we did the Pat Tate story,
Rise
of Foot Soldier 3 together.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that when we first met?
I think we met a couple of times before that, but I think properly became friends and lovers on Foot Soldier 3.
Yeah. We spent most evenings gazing into each other's eyes.
Yeah. And you've got lovely eyes.
And I've got to say, you've got lovely eyes as well, Joe.
Well, mine are very dark, yours are very light, so. Yeah.
You've got to have a bit of light with the dark, right?
Yeah, no, maybe you're right. Green Street is probably the first time I got recognised, and then I did I'm Soldier. And then when I got cast to do Foot Soldier 3, and obviously working with Craig and you, it was fantastic.
And I think what was really fun for me was we obviously become good pals.
Yeah, of course.
And we've had this ritual, Josh and I, for all the viewers and listeners at home, whenever we're on a movie,
yeah,
or whenever we work together, or we're doing anything, we always have to find...
Chinese. Yeah, we've got to find it. Because, yeah, everywhere we go,
Everywhere we go.
We've got to find a nice Chinese.
We find a Chinese.
Yeah, exactly.
Everywhere we go. That's it. A little bit like Big John when he goes, who wants a fucking Chinese?
Yeah, Bosh.
I mean, maybe it's just... London Essex lads thing, but but we've had some good Chinese.
Yeah, we have had some very good Chinese.
I think the best one was in Southend.
That was spot on, that one.
That was the one.
And there was the last one we went to, the one in Stoke.
Yeah, that was good as well.
Was it Stoke?
Yeah, that was good as well.
Yeah, that was good as well. That was nice. And it was double lively now, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was one.
he got me pissed. Let's get two bottles of wine.
No, that was you. I think you said.
Oh, I got us pissed.
No, you said, no, we have to have another bottle. And I was like, but we got work tomorrow, Josh. He was like, nah, it's fine.
Yeah,
you know,
don't worry about it.
We've seen each other for a while. Let's just
get smashed.
And then obviously on the Pat Tate story, I mean, we had some laughs on that.
Yeah, we did, mate.
What was? Let's remember some stories, mate. Because
I think the one thing that I loved, apart from working with you in the scenes of you, I mean, I think everything we did was just, I mean, you know, even like today before we come on this, it's like banter straight away. It's funny. We get on really well. We're like brothers. Obviously, you're the older brother.
Of course.
I'm like the dad you never had.
George.
We should always have a great time. I love working with you, man. It's just fun, isn't it? You know, you're going to work, and it's going to be serious when you're on camera, but it's fun, good camaraderie. It's good fun working with you and all the boys. But Foot Soldier, the Pat Tate story. I think there's so many funny moments. I think the funniest one was when we was on the set, and it was like the strip club. You know, we was all loads of us sniffing, partying, doing dancing, drinking. That was funny. That made me laugh.
I think, was that, because Emma Butler,
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I've got to share this story. If you don't know Emma Butt is, Google her. But she is
a big porn star.
One of the, probably one of the most famous sort of MILF porn actresses in the world. And as being involved in Rise of the Foot Soldier for so long, people obviously associate me with Rise of the Foot Soldier. And people then reach out and say, oh, I'd love to be in one of your films. And Emma actually reached out and said, I'd love to be in a Foot Soldier film. And I said, well, thanks, Emma. You know, I'll put you forward, you know, see what happens. And I remember that scene that you're talking about.
Yeah.
When Pat comes out of jail.
Yeah, that's right.
And then we were partying with his three girls. And one of the girls had to basically, without being sort of crude, had to basically be naked.
Yeah.
And Roland was sniffing cocaine off of her nether regions, should we say.
Yes.
And obviously a lot of actresses would be like, I'm not doing that. I'm not getting my tits out. I'm not doing nudity. You know, I'm not being treated in that manner. So it's very difficult to find an actress to actually do that. So I remember, like, we're getting nearer and nearer to the thing and everyone's going, oh, you know, we can't find an actress. And I said, look, it's a bit of a mad one, but this porn star called Emma Butt would like to be in a movie.
Yeah.
Maybe she'd do it. So I sent her an email and said, you know, Emma, you know, appreciate you expressing interest to be in a movie.
Yeah.
Would you like to be in a film? And she was like, what do I have to do?
Yeah.
And I said, oh, you know, you have to do this, you have to do that. And she went, oh, this is, you know, nothing, I'll do it, right?
Right.
So I was like, sweet. And everyone's going, wow, you know, how do you know her? And I said, well, I don't know her. We, you know, she just reached out to me, right, about being in the film. And then I remember, like, a few days before, she was like, she contacted me and said, look, so I'm really nervous. She said, I know what I'm doing in porn, but I don't know how. I said, just relax, enjoy it. Yeah. She said, do I need to bring anything? And me being me,
I know what you're gonna say.
I was like, do you have any like big sort of strap on dildos? Like,
yeah, I remember this.
And she went, yeah, of course. She goes, you've got any colour preference, right?
Yeah.
And you're multicoloured strap on dildos, right? And I started laughing and I was just thinking, this is insane, right?
Yeah.
So I got her to bring one, right?
Yeah.
And the scene, we do the scene, and for anybody who doesn't know how it works, before you do the scene, the actors rehearse, you run your lines, you make sure you stand in the right place, the director feeds you back. So Roland was sitting where you were sitting and we were doing the scene. And I was like, Ro, you know when we do that scene and you go and sniff coke off of that girl's nether regions, right? Why don't we change it, right? What if she was there with a big strap on and you sniff the gear off of that instead?
Yeah.
And he went, He goes, that's the fucking most stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard in your life. And she was standing behind him, do you remember?
That was funny.
And I went, let's just rehearse it. And he turned and he went, she was chasing him around the set. And he goes, tell. He goes, I don't hit women. He goes, but if she don't fucking get away from me with that thing, I don't know where it's been.
Yeah,
he goes, this ain't funny anymore. He got really upset.
It's funny.
So we took it off and and then one of the cameramen thought it'd be really funny to put it on the boom. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, I remember.
And it was coming in the shot. And Roland was just like, I'm going to fucking do someone in a minute.
That was funny that day.
But that was a funny day.
We always have fun, don't we?
Sometimes you have to do, I mean, this sounds crazy. I mean, this probably wouldn't happen on the BBC. Right?
Yeah. No.
Really? Soldier, anything
I don't
goes.
I think so, yeah.
can you remember any other?
Funny story. Oh, there's so bloody many.
When we was in the house? Was that when we went through the door?
When I smashed that geezer through the window. When he threw the TV. You weren't even meant to throw that TV on the set.
I know, but you know,
what fucking television? And geezer threw it. So I was like, he was like, don't throw it. And I think the director said, don't throw the TV. And you just came in, picked up Parliament and just threw it.
But
it smashed everywhere like a TV.
No, but do you know when you're in the moment, you know, do it. And I think when I picked it up, I was going, argh. And then the idea was to just hold it.
Yeah.
And then it sort of just
Of course it did. Yeah. It just lost.
Just slipped. I had the batter fingers that day.
Yeah, throwing it like that. No, it's good. Yeah, it's good. I think, but also my favourite scene was when I was, there's so many favourite scenes, but the one, the iconic one, you know, the one prostitute, two prostitute.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, that
went viral.
I mean, people regularly, right?
Yeah.
Quote, and you can always tell a good film when people quote the dialogue. You know
100%.
I mean? And the prostitute thing, I mean, there's so many. The Welsh thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many. And it's just so funny. And what I think is crazy is, you know, we're sitting here 16 years on from the release of the first one.
Mm.
And the new one, Rise of the Foot Soldier Vengeance, was released theatrically in September. When people watch this, it will probably have already been out on DVD and Blu-ray and pay-per-view and all that stuff. And, you know, it's funny, you know, if you'd have said to me 16 years ago, there's going to be six of these and a computer game and merchandise and this and that, I'd be just like, what? And I mean, we're now talking about number seven.
Yeah, so. It's mad, isn't it? But it's good. I mean, look, at the end of the day, they've got, it's a big British, one of the biggest British franchises, or if not the biggest, no? Yeah.
It's the biggest British true crime film franchise.
I mean, that's incredible.
Because there isn't another one, so.
It's incredible. And people, listen, you're always going to get people saying, oh, they're shit, they're good. But you get negative comments and good comments of anything that you do. Anyone, always going to be someone out. But I think the films are fantastic. I think the franchise is good.
The people who normally troll the films or don't like the films, right? You know, I kind of get, you know, like, I remember when we was doing Origins, right? And you're like going, well, we're going to do a prequel to a film that's, you know, 15 years old.
Yeah.
It's a little bit weird. You know, I want to play somebody 15 years younger. How am I going to do that? They're still going to have some Botox. So, you know, it's crazy. But I think what the Foot Soldier universe has basically enabled people to do, people can die, people can come back, people can do spin-offs, people can do prequels. And I think, you know, if you talk to people, you know, there's more people. Yeah, when you look online, I always think it's funny, like, you think there's real hate for this movie, right? But then when you go out, all you do is get love, right?
100%,
and I just think there's just probably 300 or 400 fucking trolls that have got nothing better to do. They're probably spending their lives, you know, just trolling people. You're fat, you're ugly, this is shit. As soon as anything goes out on Amazon or IMDb, they're the ones doing the one-star reviews. They're the ones saying it's shit, the director's shit, the actors are shit, the script's shit, it's shit. And you just think, the time you're wasting doing this, do something fucking positive.
I know.
Get a life, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. You're going to get negative comments of anything you do, you know, but, you know, I never pay attention to shit like that. Like I said, I don't deal with negativity very well. I don't like it. If I see anything on my Instagram or any of my socials but like, you people say, you see people say, oh, not another foot soldier. Well, have you seen this one yet? It's actually fucking brilliant.
What I do is I either go, don't fucking watch it then, or I just go, don't worry, there's going to be another 10.
Yeah, exactly. Probably wind them up. Yeah, exactly. But
it's like, why waste your fucking life in posting that comment?
Keyboard fucking warriors,
don't watch it.
I know. But they do watch it. People watch them.
Of course they do. I mean, it's like, you know, we had Bernard O'Mahony on this podcast, and, you know, the amount of people that kicked off and was moaning and this.
Yeah,
and
I see bits of that.
And you just think, well, you know, he's a Marmite character. But at the end of the day, you know, has he done everything, you know, that he says he's done? I don't know. But he's definitely done some of it.
Yeah, I'm
sure. He's definitely been around. He's definitely been on the door. He's definitely, you know, been in the art. He's definitely done stuff.
Yeah.
I think in life, right, and somebody said this to me the other day, and I love this saying.
Yeah.
I said, there's your truth, and then there's the truth.
Yeah,
right? So,
true.
So, you know, the person who's, if we're having a conversation now, you'll have your version of events, my version of events, the real version of events are there.
Yeah.
But everybody sees it through a different prism. I watch loads of films, and I think anybody who can actually get the money together and make a film, even if it ain't the best film in the world,
still a big fucking thing.
You have
to
give them a pat on the back, and you have to say, do you know what? Well done for making a film, getting it out there. And people, I think the problem with film critics and a lot of people that are, you know, consumers of this content, they judge it. They look at a £300 million film, the movie stars in, they look at a little million, 2 million, 5, whatever it is, film, and go, oh, well, I ain't fucking as good as that, is it? Well, of course it's not going to be as good as that because you don't have fucking £300 million to spend on it.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you know, with the critics, you know, I understand they have to be critical, but they should also go, do you know what, for the money that's spent on this film, it doesn't matter what film, it doesn't have to be Foot Soldier, it could be any film.
Yeah.
They should judge it on the merit, you know, because
100%.
Because independent films, you know, if you look at all the Hollywood directors, whether it's Guy Ritchie, Matthew Vaughn, Quentin Tarantino, you know, whoever, yeah. right? Same with the actors. They've all started with the independence.
Yeah, but you've got, you have independent to start somewhere.
Film scene, market is the breeding ground for talent, for future stars, for future writers, for future directors. And without that, there is nothing. And,
100%.
And I've always been a massive supporter of independent films. And I genuinely think that everybody should support independent films. And, you know, when people go, you know, oh, I've got a fucking dodgy box, or I'm going to wait till it comes on fucking Amazon, or I'm going to wait till it comes on Netflix for free. And I used to get excited about films.
Yeah.
And I've always been excited about films. But what I don't understand now is people are actually quite happy to wait.
Yeah.
So they don't have to pay for it. Or they watch it for free. And
on those dodgy sites or them fire sticks.
And
I
genuinely don't get that. And it does sort of annoy me.
Well, you know, what I was going to say is that people do. I mean, I know people that have got these fire sticks and stuff. They're big fans of the Foot Soldier and other films as well. But you know, I'll say, oh, have you seen my film yet? Have you seen any Foot Soldiers? Oh, you know, oh, and it does annoy me a little bit because it's like they say, oh yeah, I watched. You know, like most people I know, my friends who've seen the third one, it's either they've watched it on Sky. Or back in the day when it got released on like a dodgy thing, I'm like, yeah, I'd just wait for it to come out. I'm like, why don't you go and support your mate or go and support your friends or the British film industry? You know, we're British, you know what I mean? But it's, you know, most times out of 10, I mean, I'm guilty of it. Not doing it, I don't do it, especially like because of my dad. I can't download illegal copies because my dad would just fucking shoot me. You know what I mean? It's a big thing. It's big
old Michael Myers on your ass.
Yeah, it's a big no-no, especially he's in the film industry. So he's very set in his ways. You know, you don't do that. You don't copy films and watch it on a shit site. You know, you go and pay for it or you go and watch it how people you should do, really. Yeah. But I'm guilty of that. If I see big films, I won't legally download because I just don't know how to anyway and I shouldn't and I can't. But yeah, I'll wait for films to come out on Sky. If it's on Sky, then it's a different platform. I'm not doing it illegally. I'm buying it or renting it. But, you know, I think everyone should do that, really. But, you know, people don't want to spend money anymore.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. I mean, I know my mates will go, well, why would I spend, you know, 15, 20 quid going to the cinema when I can get it for free?
Yeah.
I understand what they're saying, but it still don't sit right with me.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that.
So,
so for all those people watching this that do this, do it to all the other films apart from our films.
Yeah. Watch all the other films on pirate. But when you watch anything that we're in, make sure you pay. Yeah. So find out where you live.
Obviously, we did Rise of the Foot Soldier, Pat Tate story.
Yeah.
One prostitute, two prostitute, three prostitute.
Yeah.
We had a great time in my bar. We had a great time here. You know, great movie. And then after that, I don't know what you did for a year or so, but I remember speaking to you about Once Upon a Time in London.
Yes. Moisha.
And it was actually quite funny because at the time when we were casting that film, and for those that haven't seen Once Upon a Time in London, it's basically period crime, true story about Billy Ill and Jack Spot, who were the original gangsters in London, both Jewish gangsters. And, you know, they were, you know, the setup for the Crazy Richardsons. I mean, all these crime families today, I mean, that was the beginning, wasn't it? There was them, there was the Sabinis, there was all these characters.
Yeah.
And you sort of just look at it, you go, wow, you know. And I remember ringing you and saying, oh, Josh, you know, do you fancy playing Moisha Blueball?
Yeah.
And you were like, fucking hell, I remember that story.
Because I remember reading the book about it way before you even spoke about it.
What book was that?
I think it was called A Man of a Thousand Cuts, Jack Spot. Hit him hard,
Jack
Spot. Do you
know something? I've not read that book, but somebody told me that was a really good book.
Really good book.
Because there was that one. And then I think Wenzie Clarkson wrote a book, didn't he, about Jack Spot. He wrote a book about Billy Ill. And I think there's a few books about subject matter. So anyone who wants to, you know, read a book about it, I think all the books are pretty good.
Well, I liked it as well, obviously, because, you know, being Jewish myself, and he was a Jew.
And you're not Bulgarian then?
No. I could be. I don't know anymore, Tel. But fuck knows. I'd be anything you want me to be, mate. As long as you pay me. And I remember reading about that book and I just thought, wow, what a great film that would be. And then obviously we spoke about it and you said you're doing a film about it. And then you rang me about it. I was like, fucking hell, yeah. So, yeah.
What was your tell us some stories about that. And, you know, it was a great time because we also did that.
It was fun, wasn't it?
That year we did Marbella as well.
Yes, we did. Yeah,
so we had two movies together.
Yeah,
Rise of the Foot Soldier, Marbella.
Yeah, it was good. It was good fun. I think I liked playing Moishe Blue Ball. I just, you know what I loved about that film is the clobber, what we wore. Yeah, the clothes, the old school stuff. I loved that. I thought that was really good. It was just great being on set every day, you know. It was fun. We did some fun stuff, didn't we? Yeah. If you haven't seen Once Upon a Time in London, go get a watch now.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, fuck me. I put my fucking teeth back in.
Have you got any fond memories of that? Was there?
Just working with you, Tell. That was the best. No, I think you had hair then.
I did.
You had hair, didn't you?
No, because it...
You had hair then.
This will make you laugh, right? So I still have hair
not
now.
Not a lot of it, but yeah.
I still have hair now, but...
On your eyebrows.
But what happened was, when I turned 40, my hair went grey.
Yeah.
And then it started to recede. And I literally remember going to the hairdressers once a month, and you're sitting there for like 3 hours with all the fucking hair dye on.
Oh.
And I'm sitting there thinking, I don't actually give a fuck about my hair. I really don't give a fuck about it. And that was the last film I did with hair.
Once Upon a Time in London?
Yeah. And then I was like, you know what? It's all coming
fuck
off
it.
Now.
Do it. It does suit you. You're very lucky.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people said that. A lot of people said...
You're lucky. Some people can be bald and they look like a fucking lunatic. You know what I mean? You're like, fuck, you know, it looks like he wants to kill me. But you look good.
Oh, thank you, darling.
You're welcome.
And then, obviously, after that, we did Rise of the Foot Soldier, my Bayer.
Yes, we did. That was fun.
Kenny Boy's back in action.
Yeah. I only had a little part in that one, didn't I? I only had a little part in that because I don't think I was even going to be in that one, was I? And then they were like, oh no, we need Kenny for this scene. Because I was only in a couple of scenes, wasn't I?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah. Cause after that, it was Origins and I got my big part again.
Right.
Okay. So Marbella was, I only did a couple of scenes with, I think, I don't think I even had a scene with you, just did it with Craig.
So what was your funny, you must have some funny memories of Marbella. There must be.
Well, when I was working on Pat Day Story. Yeah. Fucking hell.
I mean,
man. I mean, there was one. I think moment when we was working. Me and Craig were working together on the bar scene where we've just done a pill. Oh, I'll tell you, it was great fun. It was when I did the scene on the beach. It's like you're filming on the beach and like another take. Yeah, like, yeah, do as many as you want. We don't care. Got the sun, sea, doing what you know. And we had to pretend to take an E pill, and then we get fucked up. And we were just that was probably the best moment. Like it was just fun. But I think funny-wise, cracking up was obviously when we was in the bar and they were like, oh, should we actually get you some real drinks to go with the scene a little bit? Because we're meant to be a couple of pills in now, be a bit fucked, and then we're meeting Brasses and taking them back to the hotel and smashing them in. That's when they...
Are you talking about real life or the film?
No, this was yesterday. Oh, did you want to talk about the film?
Yeah, so we're talking about the film.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry. that was not yesterday. Yes, that was the film.
That was last week.
Yeah, last week. I thought you said what happened last week. Yeah. I don't know, must have got for it. Yeah, so that was fun. Drink, like, because you don't really, like, you never really drink or do anything on a film set, but obviously, like, we were just like, oh, we'll have a couple just to get a bit merry, because we wanted to get into the character a bit more method. So we did that, and that was just a fucking laugh. Me and Craig just fucking cracking up at each other, laughing, walking down the bloody Marbella High Street with, like, my shorts. And
you wouldn't have that for Fela. That was
thing, being on the boat as well when we did the yacht scene. When like he says, "Oh, you've done like 10 lines in 4 minutes or something like that." It's just all fun, man. Just banter. Everything was good. Working with everyone's great, man. There's not one person on the cast or even on the crew that I think I don't want to work with them again. Yeah. I love everyone, man. It's great.
I mean, it is like a family.
Yeah, of course it is, man. Yeah.
And then obviously the pandemic happens.
Yes.
Talk to me about that. Because did you have your daughter in the pandemic, or was it before?
No, it's before.
Right.
I had my daughter before.
Let's talk about your daughter, because you obviously had a serious girlfriend at the time.
Yes, I did.
Was you engaged, or?
No. I wasn't engaged, thank fuck for that. Yeah, I had her before, when was it? Well, she's 6 next month, so 6 years ago now. I had her, but yeah, no.
It was probably when we were filming Once Upon a Time in London and Marbella.
I think you're correct in saying that. Yeah, my daughter's doing amazing. She's doing really well.
I mean, let's talk about your daughter. I mean, your daughter, you know, they always say when you have a girl, she's a daddy's girl.
100%.
And obviously, I know you've had some traumatic times with...
Of course, yeah.
...with the mother.
Yeah.
And obviously... over your daughter. I mean, do you want to talk about that? Or,
sure, yeah. I won't go too much into the past of me and my ex and stuff, but, you know, everything is now amazing. That's what I'm saying, like, negative stuff in it, do you know what I mean? Like, someone who suffers with depression, the shit that I went through with, like, my ex and finding out what she was doing behind my back and what she does, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, at the end of the day, you know, I'm there for my daughter all the time now.
So also share about your daughter, because your daughter was born with a disability as well.
Yeah, my daughter was born with a disability, yeah. So my daughter was born without any sight. She's born fully blind. She's got no light perception, my daughter.
Did you know that when she was born, Josh?
No, we didn't know that at first. It was just like, I think she was a month or something old like that. It was actually my mum who realised. She said her eyes don't seem a bit like movie, if that's the right word. They're moving a bit. And we just went to a specialist and they just said, yeah, we're really sorry that your daughter's blind. She's got no light perception. She's blind. They did tests and she's got nerve damage and stuff like that. So it was hard, especially for me. I suffer with depression. Do you know what I mean? So
I mean,
it's a killer.
As a father.
Yeah.
And as a man that obviously wanted to have that little girl.
Yeah, of course.
How did you cope with that, Josh? Because that must have been hard.
I didn't cope very well.
Right.
At all. At that time as well, I was going through a shit relationship, toxic.
Right.
But obviously, I wanted to do everything I could and be there for my daughter because she's my world. But yeah, obviously, finding out that my daughter was blind killed me. Absolutely. It destroyed me, literally. You know, all these things would go through my head, like, oh, she's never going to see my face. She's never going to see certain things. She's never going to see the sky. All these little things we take for granted. You know, in a way, I know it's cruel to say, I mean, it upsets me every day, but I see my daughter and she's always singing. She's always happy. She's dancing.
But you know something? That's one thing that...
if she's happy, I'm happy.
But that's one thing that a lot of people, you know, you get sympathy from people. People go, oh, yeah. I couldn't imagine if that was my son or daughter. I can't imagine how you cope with that. But to her...
Yeah.
She's not known anything different.
That's what I was going to say.
So that's why she's happy, because this is a reality, you know?
I think,
you know, like you said, people do take things for granted. People take for granted getting up in the morning and actually walking around.
Mate.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, they're lucky they've woken up.
Fucking yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
100%, mate. When I see my daughter now, you know, like she's doing so well. She's excelling at school. She's got a one-to-one who walks around and looks after her 24/7 at school. But yeah, she's just doing really well, you know.
Is there any, because I know that there's been some research in stem cell therapy and different things, which some people have been able to partially regain some sight or full sight. Is she able to have any treatment like that or not?
At the moment, for what she's got, there's no cure for what she's got. But they did say that she was born in the right era. And that, fingers crossed, in her lifetime there could be something they can do. There's not a yes yet, because I can't remember the exact name what it's called, because I'll probably fuck it up. But yeah, it's nerve damage and all that stuff in her eyes and stuff. So they can't really cure that at the moment. But they did say that she's born in the right era, and there's so much amazing stuff out there that they can do.
Look, technology and medicine changes daily.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you never know. She might actually be out.
Listen, it's my absolute dream tell to have my daughter just see her own dad's face. Fuck's sake, you know what I mean? That's just her look at me and go, daddy. You know what I mean? It's just, but you know, at the moment she can't. But at the end of the day, it does. It still gets me down. But I'm in such a good place physically and mentally at the moment. I don't let it get to me as much as it did.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my therapist says, look, you can't change it. You can't do anything about it.
Right.
Fucking basically just put up with it, because you have to be there for your daughter, do everything you can for her, make sure she has the best life, and trust me, I am. And she's doing amazing. She's proper daddy's little girl.
And I genuinely think in life, you know, lots of people complain about their situation, whether they've lost a job, they've lost someone in their family, or somebody's been born with an issue, or there's always, I don't know anybody genuinely who goes through life and has no problems.
Right? Yeah, I mean, if you are lucky.
I know some people go, oh, well, it's right for them, they're lucky.
Yeah.
But genuinely, I think everybody has some trauma or some issue to deal with. And I think what your therapist said is actually great advice to anybody listening or watching this.
Yeah.
You know, if there's something you can change, change it.
Yeah.
If there isn't, you just have to accept it, and you have to do whatever, like you said, you work with it every day. You know, you see your daughter and you want her to be able to see the sky, but you can't do anything about it. So all you can do is what you're doing.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
I think lots of people that will be watching this or listening to this probably won't know a story about your daughter.
Yeah.
And I think it's good to share it, because it gives people hope, because people then sort of go, well, actually, I thought what I was going through was shit.
Yeah.
But it ain't that shit. Do you know what I mean? There's 100%. Always someone better than you, and it's always someone worse.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what? You know, you've hit the nail on the head there, Tal, is that my friend said to me the other day, he said, well, at least you're not going to hospital to see her every day and she's on life support.
Yeah.
Or at least she's not dying of cancer. You know, and that's a very morbid conversation, but you see all these adverts on TV, you see children in hospice, in a hospice, 4 or 5 years old, dying of leukemia.
I mean, the last...
And you think, you're not that parent, you can see her every day, she's alive, she's kicking, she's doing really well. Yes, she can't see, and it is very fucking hurtful, and it brings me to tears sometimes when I see her, but she was here now, she's like happy, she's singing, she's dancing, I know she can't see, but like you said, another massive thing is that she doesn't know no different. She was born without sight, so she adapts to it. Do you know what I mean? So I'm glad that she didn't have sight and then it got taken away from her. So I'm glad that it's how it's happened like that. So
in the last 3 weeks, I've had people contacting me on social media about young children, and I'm talking 7, 8 years old, having life-saving cancer treatment. And that breaks my heart,
Terrible.
You see that happening to kids, it's... I've always done a lot of work for children's charities because I've always wanted to help where you can.
Sure, yeah, of course.
And also cancer's a big thing for me as well because I have lost quite a few people from that. But you know, if does your daughter get any help from any sort of charities for?
At the moment, there's not. I mean, yeah, obviously the government, they give a disability allowance, and they like, for example, we got a walking shower built in for her the other day because obviously she's getting heavy now, so start lifting up and putting in the bath. She can do it herself, but the walking showers are sort of easier, so they pay for that. We just got a gate out of the back. I mean, she's never in the garden on her own, but I mean, like,
the only reason I'm asking, Josh, I just thought if anyone's watching this and they wanted to donate any money to a blind charity, if you had one.
I'd say if to do anything is to dedicate or put money into Moorfields Eye Hospital, because they are incredible. I think they must have a charity, Moorfields. I'm sure they do. But Moorfields are just incredible. What they do for my daughter, what the checkups they do, it's an incredible hospital. Moorfields is great. It's one of the top hospitals in the world. I'd like to become an ambassador for guide dogs, something like that, and then not necessarily just help children or anyone that are blind, but just help people, and kids mainly.
You're the best person for that, because you've lived with it and you've had to deal with the challenges and adapt your life around what she's experiencing.
100%,
having that and then being able to then share that with other people and add some value, I think that's an amazing thing.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I mean, there's a lot of people out there a lot worse off than me who, lost their kid. A kid's dying of this, they're in hospital, I do think about that stuff and it's very sad. No one wants to bury their kid, God forbid. But I look at my daughter and I think, look, you're breathing, you're healthy, you're happy, life is good. She's excelling in life and doing really well. I really can't complain about that at the moment. So I've just got to stay strong, stay focused and stay positive in my life, especially towards my daughter,
So what else do you do on the side, Josh, when you're not
When I'm not acting, I'm a barber. I cut hair.
Anybody wants to get their barnet trimmed, where do they go?
They just DM me on Instagram.
Right.
Because I ain't giving you my number.
Josh Myers, mobile hairdressing service.
Yeah,
he comes to you.
I'll tell you why. Is that when I was younger, my dad was just like, look, your acting might never get to the stage you want to get to. So you've got to have something to fall back on. So I just did a barbering course. I was always good with my hands. So I did a barbering course.
So you are the Edward Scissorhands of North London.
Yeah.
I think it's good though, because lots of people... Again, that are watching this.
Yeah, especially up and coming actors, you know.
And listening to this, will go, I just want to be an actor. I don't want to plan B.
Yeah.
I just want to focus on acting. But the reality is 95% of all actors are unemployed.
Yeah.
And obviously you could have a part in a movie, you could be the lead. It's not coming out for a year.
Yeah.
So what are you going
to
do?
That's exactly it. So I would say to anybody watching this, if you're an actor or whatever, always have something to fall back on. You always got to have something, always got to have loads of other strings to your bow.
You
have
a reason to get up in the morning, right?
100%. If you're just, we did Vengeance, and after Vengeance, I did a horror film. But the last couple of months, I've not done anything apart from, we'll get to the tour thing that we're doing. But I've got bits and bobs, pardon me, for next year and towards the end of the year, fingers crossed. But in that couple of months gap. I don't want to just sit around and do nothing.
Yeah.
I'll drive me mad. Yeah. So I'm cutting hair 2-3 times a week. I'm going to the gym. I'm keeping active, being with my daughter. Always doing something.
But I think that's the best advice.
100%.
Be busy.
Because
if you're not busy,
yeah,
then you can drive yourself mad. 100%.
And I also think if you're, especially an up-and-coming actor or an actor, yes, you may be going drama school, fit school and pursuing that career, but always have something in the background that you can always earn money. Yeah. I always have like something you can fall back on that if it really didn't work.
Get a legal side hustle.
Legal, yeah, not illegal. Legal side hustle.
So, yeah, thank you for sharing that with us. And obviously, we then fast forward to the pandemic. Mm. How was the pandemic for you, Josh?
It was all right, not great. It didn't. It fucked up my mental health quite a bit, my depression, because you're stuck indoors, isn't you? You can't really go anywhere. Right. I'd try and go for a jog in the morning, because I think you was let out like an hour a day, weren't you? Like fucking cage animals.
I think you was allowed out, but I don't think you weren't allowed to mingle, were you?
Yeah,
unless you had a reason to go.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was horrible, and also as well, like the first lockdown, just wasn't great for my depression. It didn't really fuck me up. It was just mad. But I think it was just because.
How'd you spend your day? Was you playing Connect Four with yourself or solitaire?
Oh no, I was playing myself. I wasn't playing Connect Four. Playing myself as much as I could. Now I just tried to stick to a routine. Get up,
right.
Eat breakfast.
Play with yourself.
Play myself many times. Go to the gym. No, you couldn't go to the gym, could you? I had to work out at home. I had to do a workout at home. It was hard. I didn't like it.
I tell you what was what the highlight for me of the pandemic was. I did an audio book, so I was sitting here in April and I was thinking, can't do anything, can't go anywhere. We're developing all this content. Will we make it? Will we not make it? Will the cinemas reopen? Yeah. Are we all going to die? Who knows?
Right? Yeah.
And I just thought, you know what? Everyone kept saying I should narrate my audio book, so. Yeah. And I made my audio book, King of Clubs, which was about clubs. And then I think it was like a month after that, I got a phone call from Andy saying, we're going to do an origin story. We're going to do a Tony Duck story. And I was like, that's fucking cool. And he goes, you've got to play yourself 16 years younger.
Yeah.
So we had a bit of a laugh about it. But then you got the call.
Yeah.
And what was great is when we got that call and we knew, actually, this is going to happen at some point this year.
Yeah.
I think it gave us all something to look forward to.
But it boosted morale, innit?
And I remember, like, literally, I think it was, I don't know if it was June or July, but things started opening up again.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you know, we're going to, I can't remember, because it feels like fucking 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But we was at this stage, now we're going at this stage, and you don't have to do this. And it felt, oh, well, maybe we're going back to normal. And then I remember, literally, getting in the gym, and I was like, fucking, really, really put Martin Zoe into that film.
It
was an hard film. Like,
I was very proud of you on that film.
Oh, I love you.
I think you did great, man.
And I remember getting in Southend, checking in that hotel, seeing your face, seeing Craig's face, seeing Vinnie Jones's. It was just like, we're all doing this movie, and it was quite daunting for me because it was the first time I'd ever played a role like that.
Big lead,
but what I loved about it was the fact that. We were all in their bubble.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And it was like, literally, we're not going home till we finish this.
Yeah.
And I used to, like you, have a routine, get up in the morning, go to the gym. And then obviously I shut the fucking gyms again. We was in another lockdown.
Yeah.
And I remember like being in this like nice hotel in Southend with you guys and thinking, for fuck's sake, we're back where we were in 6 months ago.
Yeah.
But then I thought, you know what? I'm fucking working. Yeah. With 100 of my mates, and we did have a fucking laugh. Didn't we?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, laugh.
I mean, I remember that was when we did the Josh Myers challenge.
Oh, no. Oh, that was horrible. Only you that makes me do that.
And for those of you that don't know what the Josh Myers challenge is, it's on Instagram. There's this lovely Indian family who owned
The Seven Hotel.
The Seven Hotel in Southend, and they looked after us. And I felt like I'd become part of their family.
Yeah, they were good people.
We had this private dining room at the back of the hotel where we had like some great gatherings. And on one night, the guy come round and I don't know who came up with the Josh Myers challenge. It could have been me.
I'm pretty sure it was you. Pretty sure you're the one who tried to fuck me up. What was the first thing I took?
Do you know?
Oh, was it the fish head?
No. So what it was, there was some fish on the table.
That was disgusting.
So there was a fish head and I think a towel. And Josh ate the fish head and towel. So he passed part one of the Josh Myers challenge.
That's terrible, wasn't it?
But then it went on from there.
Yeah, every time we meet up, we have to do a challenge.
But no, but it went on because I don't know if you remember, we said, oh, have you got anything really fucking hot? And they went, we do.
Oh, yeah, and I drank it, didn't I?
And I can't remember what it was, but they made you a cocktail with like some naga chili or what they call reaper chilies. It was like really bad.
Up.
And I remember you knocking this thing back.
Feel
like one of the dogs going to be sick there.
Not salivating, am I? I was like, I didn't even ask you. You just going, do it, drink it, just fucking drink it. And I drank it. I was like, what is this?
But you wasn't sick.
I wasn't sick.
You did well.
In my head, I was.
You passed the Josh Myers challenge.
Thank you very much.
And I think we have done it again. We've done two now.
Yeah, we've done two. We've got to keep going.
We've got to do the third one. But we've got to be on another movie.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'm up for that. Yeah, good
idea. But what was your... Give us some stories from Origins, because that was a great film. It was some fun. I think one of the funniest ones was when we was in that car park and blew the car up.
Oh, fucking hell.
Right, so we're in this car park in Southend. And we blew the car park up. Sorry, we almost blew the car park up because the car went up and it was like a door.
A sunroof.
And it went across and it literally...
Just missed, yeah.
I mean, it was literally that fucking far away from actually ironing someone out.
Yeah, oh yeah, it was, yeah.
I mean, we were lucky.
The car blew up when it was... Was it old school Merc, wasn't it? The car blew up, bang. I think they put too much explosives in. They must have. And the fucking car just went boom. And this... I didn't even know if I could get the car like that. And I was like, move. We were good like 50 feet back, weren't we, or more. It was because obviously safety first. And we just went, and the fucking sunroof is like on fire, like 100 feet in the air, just flying down towards the crowd. Yeah. And it just missed me about that much. I was right next to George Russo and he pushed me out of the way and this and that. I was fucking hell.
Thank God nobody got injured on that.
Yeah, I know, that was mental.
But we were insured anyway, but...
Yeah, if you would have got ironed out, we would have just left you there, but we would have got money paid out, been sweet.
Your families would have been okay.
Yeah, I'll pay you out, don't I?
But I think another funny story was, I don't know if you remember when we was doing that thing with Vinny outside the club, and he comes out and he hits me.
Yeah.
I do remember,
when you fell and there was no mat.
and just for those people watching and listening at home, there's normally a crash mat, right? And then what they do is they edit it out.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you actually get knocked on your ass and you bounce on the concrete, it fucking hurts.
Yes, it does hurt.
And this fucking div moved the crash mat out of the way and he's hit me and I've just gone straight on my ass and I've like bouncing on the concrete.
Yeah,
and
you fell straight back on the concrete, yeah.
And I was worried because, you know,
we tried to stop you, but you just fell straight back.
You know, like at the bottom of your spine, the coccyx. Actually thought, I'm going to have a broken fucking coccyx here.
I'm going to
be in a fucking A&E and fucking COVID. I don't want to pee.
Yeah, broken my arse.
I've got up and everyone's going, are you okay? You okay? I'm like, yeah. Fine.
Yeah, and then after you're crying like a little girl. My bum. Oh, fucking hell.
But it was
fun.
I was
crying. I'm so sorry.
I'm glad you thought it was fun anyway.
I thought it was hilarious. Because I tried to stop you because you couldn't see there was no mat there. And I could see there was no mat. And I was thinking, he must know there's no mat here because he's about to come at him. We're rehearsing and he's going to punch him. He's going to fall back. Hopefully he just stepped back and you proper went. Oh, it was fucking fun times. That
was great. I'm trying to think of some other funny stories about Origins because there was some funny things, weren't there?
I think every day was funny for me. There wasn't a day that goes by I didn't have stitches in my stomach.
And the premiere of that was good as well, wasn't it? Leicester Square.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, it was fantastic. It was really good. I think you was great in that film, mate. You was really, really good.
Thanks. Well, listen, I think we definitely have done some great work together.
100%,
we've been in some good movies. You know,
we have got some good
films,
talk
about Once Upon a Time in London, you talk about Foot Soldier 3, 4 and 5, and obviously the new one, 6.
Yeah.
They're all good movies.
Very good films.
I think the funniest thing, when I come on Rise of the Foot Soldier Vengeance, when obviously I'm not in this one, but involved in it on the production side.
Yeah.
But I remember I come on set the day you were getting fucking ironed out. And,
You did,
And what was funny, Ben was there and after you died, I said, oh, Ben, you got to do the South Park thing. Oh, my God.
Who killed Kenny? Yeah, I remember that.
And Nick came up going, tell, you can't put it on social media. You're going to fucking ruin the film. It's a spoiler. And he had like, it's fucking huge. Like, black. I said, mate, I'm not going to post it till after the film comes out.
Don't worry.
He gets so panicky, Nick. But I do love him. I think what he did with Origins, I mean, he upped the bar. And I think what he did with Vengeance, again, completely different movie to Origins, but
yeah.
I think Nick as a director is phenomenal. I think he's
good. What? I'm glad you touched on that. You know, not only is Nick a very good friend of mine, but he's just fantastic. He really is good. You know, I'm not just blowing smoke up his ass because he's my mate. He's fucking great at what he does. Really good director. As you can see, Origins is fantastic. Vengeance is amazing. You know, and you've
got to see what he does next. I mean, I know he's talking about Headhunters and
maybe I think whatever Nick does is going to be fantastic because you know what I love about Nick is that he puts his heart and soul into every fucking, not the film, every fucking scene.
He's a perfectionist.
Yeah, he's fucking great.
And absolutely he cares.
Fantastic. Yeah, and he cares.
And you know, some people don't like that hands-on, aggressive, like, this is what I want you to do way of directing. But I loved it because I think as an actor, you can do your work. You can come on set and think how you're going to do different things.
Yeah.
But if somebody actually comes up to you and goes, that was good, but this is fucking better.
Yeah.
And you do it and you go, fucking hell, thank you.
Yeah,
100%. Because you want, as an actor, you want to be good. You want to perform.
Yeah,
100%. You want people to fucking, I want to be told if I'm not doing something right.
Yeah.
Or if I pick something up or look somewhere or deliver something differently.
Yeah.
I'd much rather fucking be doing that than just do it and then looking at it
Well, directors have got that monitor, haven't they? Or the monitor, they can see what you can't see. So you may think you do it well, and they go, you know, well, when you did this, you did that. And when I'm watching this, I would rather you did that. So, you know, yeah. And Nick, you know, would tell me straight up, you know, do this, do it like that. Don't shout on this bit. Be a bit softer with your voice and be a bit more menacing.
Make sure you play this one really camp, Josh.
Yeah, he has said it a few times.
And what was the horror film you did after?
That's a film called Death Do Us Apart. Me and Jason Fleming. He's a good
actor.
Great, yeah, he's a really good actor, Jason. We worked together on that. It's basically, I can't say too much. It's basically just, I'll say it's a comedy horror.
Right, okay.
It's funny. It's going to be good when it comes out, I hope.
No, I'm sure it will be.
It will be, because I'm in it.
You're not in that many bad films, Josh.
No. This
We've
is
all done
good.
A few bad films in our
yeah,
lives.
Yeah, of course.
But,
who hasn't?
One of the films that we didn't touch on was Antisocial.
Yes. Wow, yeah.
And you actually worked with Prince Harry's bird.
Yeah, Meghan Markle, yeah. So me and my friend Sam had a concept for a film, approached the director and said...
Reg done that as well,
Reg did do that, he wrote it, yeah. So it was our idea, Reg wrote it. Obviously, he put a lot of input into it as well. And there was Antisocial. I mean, it should have done a lot better than it did, but, you know, we won't go into that one. But yeah, it worked with Meghan Markle. She played my brother's love interest in the film. So she was in, I think, Suits at the time, the TV series in America.
That was massive as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. So again?
That was a big show.
Yeah, Suits is massive. Yeah, I mean, I never watched it, but I know my mum and dad loved it, blah, blah. But yeah, no, yeah, I worked with her for about 7-8 weeks. I worked with her, Meghan Markle. She was actually nice. She was actually cool. Cool to me.
Right.
But yeah, and then fast forward years later, she's now... Was it Duchess of Sussex, I think, or something like that? Well, she's married to Prince Harry now.
Maybe we should have got some pictures and some videos of her.
I've got a picture of her.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I'll just keep it private.
No, I thought you'd post it on Instagram and said, me with
Prince Harry's bird.
Wife.
Yeah.
Just hanging out.
And my mate's actually got a video that he was a big fan of Suits. He's still got it on his phone with her saying, hi, how are you? I'm with your best friend, Josh. He's telling me you love the show. Lots of love. He's still got that, yeah. So he's like, I've actually got that from her. So
that's amazing.
She's cool.
So he's worked with Meghan Markle.
Yeah.
He's worked with Craig Faber, he's worked with Two Stone. I mean, you know, who would you like to work with in the future that you haven't worked with?
Good question. I would have said Tom Hardy, but I've worked with Tom Hardy. That was cool. He's a fantastic actor. Who would I like to work with? Off the top of my head, I'd say Jason Statham.
Yeah.
Yeah, I reckon I'm the new Jason Statham.
The better looking version.
Yeah, obviously. Fucking hell, mate.
I tell you what, he is a phenomenal guy. I mean, I've met him and I've got to say, like, he is so down to earth and he's so, like, I mean, he's just a movie star, isn't he? I mean, you know, he's come from Lockstock and he's probably one of the highest paid actors in Hollywood
100%,
now.
Yeah, he's absolutely smashed.
But he is absolutely, you know, I think anybody... Yeah. Who's in a film with him, they're going to see a massive boost in their career.
Yeah, 100%, yeah. I think he's really good at his craft and I think he's really good.
And obviously, if you were talking about films, what are your favourite, and I won't say favourite because I think when people say, what's your favourite gangster film, it's a stupid fucking question because there's not one.
Yeah, there's so many.
What would you say would your all-time five or 10 in no particular order, just the ones that you watched and went, fuck me, I'd love to have been in that. Or that
Got to be a gangster film?
Yeah. We're on a crime podcast. We don't want to talk about fucking rom-coms, do we?
Oh, I was going to say Shrek, Moana, Goodfellas.
Goodfellas, yeah.
That's got to be number one for me. Scarface.
Yeah.
I don't know many, to be fair. I just think of Goodfellas, really. That was my top. Yeah. Casino.
Yeah.
Fucking unbelievable film. That's top three. I don't know if it's a gangster film. I can't think of any others. But them are definitely that.
Would you like me to help you?
Yes, please.
Would you like me to help you? Well, I'm the podfather, so
gangster number one, I know
this shit, right? Inside out, right? So, yeah. Sexy Beast?
Sexy Beast is great.
Godfather?
Yes, all of them.
What, even the third one?
Yeah. No, I was just talking about the franchise.
The third one.
No, original was the best one.
I watched the first one, and I thought, wow, that is a great movie. And then when I watched the second one, when De Niro played The Godfather, I was just like, oh my God. I mean, that for me was, I mean, De Niro's done some amazing performances.
Oh, it's incredible.
Him playing Marlon Brando,
oh.
I mean, he did it. I mean, it was like watching the fucking young Marlon Brando. That's how good he was.
Yeah, he's pretty special.
And then the third one, I didn't get that at all. I've always thought Francis Ford Coppola is an amazing director.
Yeah.
And the first two films, they were probably two of the best gangster films ever made.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, when I say ever made, I mean, you know, I put that in the box with Casino, Goodfellas,
Scarface, 100%, of course.
Carlito's Way.
Oh, Carlito's Way, great film.
Carlito, come back up
there. Remember me, Benny Blanco from the Bronx?
See, you remember all this?
Yeah, my brain was, I couldn't stop staring at you, so I was all kerfuffled.
Love, Honor and the Bay was another
great
one.
Film. Love, Honor and the Bay.
Final Cut, did you see that?
No, I never saw Final Cut.
That was Jude Law's first movie, he was great in that.
Jude Law, that was good.
Obviously, the Rise of the Foot Soldier franchise.
Yeah, they're big gangsters.
There's so many.
Yeah, so many.
When you was obviously at drama school and you were looking to be an actor, did you look at any actors and go, I really want to have that guy's career, whether it was Ray Winston or Jason Statham? Was there anybody that you looked at growing up and you was like, that's what's inspiring me to act, other than wanting to do it, an actual...
Good question. I'll be honest, I didn't really have anyone. I was just like, oh, I want to have his life. I want to be like that. I just thought, I want to be an actor. I don't really care about, not saying I'm famous now, obviously we all get recognised in certain places for the films that we've done, but I know it comes with the territory, but I just want to wake up every day and be on the film set and be acting. That is my life. That's what I want. I know that obviously certain parts of fame and things come with it, but that really don't bother me. I just want to have my, like, what are you doing today? I'm on a film set. You know, I'm working. I want to be working all the time. I love acting.
I think when I grew up, I think mine was Ray Winston. I always watched Ray Winston films, and I love Ray Winston as an actor. And I was, but I never wanted to act. I never wanted to be in movies. You know what I mean? But I got into it by default, right? Somebody saying, "Oh, why don't you be in this movie?" And that's what got me into it.
Yeah.
But I'd always, if you said to me, like, with the music scene, who was your favourite DJs?
Yeah.
Who was your favourite? You know, do you like Taylor Swift? Do you like Sinatra? You know, you have favourite artists that you, do you like Drake?
Yeah.
Do you like Nines? Yeah, there'd be people that you go, if I like rap music, I'm 50 Cent, Nines, Drake. You know, you'll have your list of rap people you like.
Yeah.
And in movies, it was Ray Winston. And then when I watched Sexy Beast, it was Ben Kingsley. And
people, he was amazing out, wasn't he?
And people said to me, you know, that's such a great movie. And I said, you know, sir, I said, that shows you how good Ray Winston is, because if you've got Sir Ben Kingsley calling you a cunt every day and you keep a straight face, I mean, you know, it was the funniest film I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And he actually, like, if you watch Ben Kingsley in, or Sir Ben as he's called, in Gandhi or any of his other movies, and then you see him in that, you just go, my God. I mean, it was like...
His very first time, wasn't
he? He was so good.
He's an amazing actor. I think he was fantastic in Sexy
Beast. If you haven't seen Sexy Beast, it's worth watching it. Just
very
you
good
can
film, definitely watch
hear
it.
Sir Ben Kingsley call Ray Winston a cunt.
Yeah, many many times in one scene. No, oh yeah, it was great. Sexy Beast is a fantastic film.
So what's your plans for the future, Josh? Have you got anything you're working on or anything that's coming up?
I've got a few films that I've been offered, actually, for beginning of next year. Hopefully got some other stuff lined up towards the end of this year. Just got to keep plodding along. Just got to keep going. Just got to get myself out there more. We're doing our gangster tour.
Yep.
That'll be looking forward to that.
So that's also something that's very exciting.
Yeah, very.
Again, come out of a friend of mine, Kaz, who runs a company called Stargaze Entertainment.
Yeah.
He literally said, oh, you know, I really want to do a UK gangster tour.
Yeah.
And he reached out to pretty much everybody and said, do you want to be in it?
Yeah.
Some people said they didn't want to do it. Some people said they did want to do it. Some people were busy. But yeah. I think we've got a great selection from yourself, me, Nick Moran. We've got Vass Blackwood.
Jamie Foreman,
Roland Manoukian.
Yeah.
So we have got a nice selection of Frank Harper.
Yeah.
Nice selection of guys doing these meet and greet tours.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
And, you know, I thought about it and I thought, actually, if you could spend money and go out and have a night out with these guys and the places they're going, like Kingston, Enfield, Leeds, Birmingham, places that, you know, you don't normally... would have that sort of, we might have all been in these places, but not all at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
So to actually be out of a picture, to be able to have a chat, to have us on stage talking, them asking questions, I think it's a fucking genius thing. And I said to Kaz, I said, I think it's great. And the plan, obviously, was to do the first UK British Gangster Tour this year, and then next year in 2024, take it on overseas. But also do the other, because obviously the UK is a massive place.
Of course.
To actually hear all the sounds. So we could be quite busy next year just doing that.
I hope we are, mate.
In between being movie stars.
Yeah, I hope we are.
Cutting hair.
Exactly.
And doing podcasts.
Yeah. I hope we are, because I think it's a great thing to do to give back to the fans, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And have a night with them. And I think it'd be fantastic to do that.
Because also, you know, you can come and to a film premiere, but there's 700 people there. It's all a bit manic, a bit chaotic. People are drunk. Some of the actors might not be there because they're travelling or they're working on another film.
Yeah.
But then on something like this, like, we're there. You know what I mean?
100%,
so, you know, you got us for 4 or 5 hours, however long you want us for.
Unbelievable. I can't wait. Make sure you check it out.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, Josh, thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
We've had a great great chat today.
Good chat. And, we always have a good chat.
And, you know, it was just good hearing about your life and about all the things you've been through and experienced. And, you know, I think, you know, you've grown into... a lovely man.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
And, you know, you're doing well as an actor and, you know, you've got your business as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's I'm excited as a friend and as a colleague to see what you do over the next 13 years.
I hope so. Well, thanks, Phil. Very nice of you to say that, mate. Appreciate that.
In 13 years' time, come back on here.
Yeah.
And you'll be 50 and I'll be 65.
Yeah.
And we can have a chat and say, what did we do since we had that?
Yeah. Fucking hell.
Have we become more inappropriate?
Yeah.
Or
probably.
Less inappropriate?
Probably more inappropriate.
Josh, have you been cancelled yet?
Oh, fucking, I hope not.
So thank you for watching the latest episode of the Criminal Connection podcast. Josh Myers, what a laugh, what a guest, what a legend. Make sure you tune in next week. We've got more great guests, more great stories, more banter, more fun. Criminal Connection Podcast, Terry Stone, the Podfather. Check it out. See you next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.